This is Art in Focus, brought to you by the McMullen Museum of Art at Boston College. My name is Nisha Momin, class of 2021, and a McMullen student ambassador. I'd like to welcome you in listening to the fourth episode in a series on the exhibition, Taking Shape, Abstraction from the Arab World, 1950s to 1980s. This episode will feature a conversation between Boston College professors Peter Krause and Ali Banu Azizi of the Political Science Department. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy.
All right, so really excited to be part of this McMullen Museum podcast with Professor Ali Banu Azizi. My name is Peter Krause. We are both professors in political science. Ali, maybe you could lead us off and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your research and teaching in the department.
Thank you, Peter. It's a pleasure to be with you and to participate in this podcast. I'm really delighted to have this exhibit at Boston College. I've been at Boston College for many decades. I hate to mention the actual number of years, close to 50 years. And as you mentioned, I'm your colleague in the political science department, but for something like 20 years, I directed a program called Islamic Civilization and Societies at Boston College. And I think relevant to what we are doing today, from the very beginning, we really featured the arts as part of our program on Middle Eastern studies. We had two very distinguished colleagues, Sheila Blair and Jonathan Bloom, as members of our board of directors in that program, and they offered courses in Islamic art and culture. My own focus in research in recent years has been on the political cultures of the Middle East, and a bit more specifically, the relationship between, if you will, cultural identity and nationalism in the Middle East. And I'm happy to say that I'm at the end of my teaching career at Boston College, but I will continue to be affiliated with our department and university in the coming years.
Wonderful. And Ali also, for those who don't know, I believe was a former president of MESA, the Middle East Studies Association. And I'm really honored to also be a member of ICS, this great program that Ali headed for so long. And I really support, you know, the concept of having the arts be part of it, because I think for many, you know, Americans or people at BC, you know, when people think about the Middle East, they often only see it through a political lens or what they read in the news. And so it's great to get a greater understanding about culture and society as well. So, yeah, we're very happy to be part of this Art in Focus project at the McMullen Museum. In terms of who I am, I also teach classes in political science, international studies. Like Ali, I've also been focused a lot on nationalism. So my first book looked at why some national movements succeed and get independence and others don't. And actually, two of my four cases were the Algerian national movement and the Palestinian national movement. And so I'm very excited today that we're going to talk about an Algerian artist piece, a painting that's part of the collection, as well as a Palestinian artist. So very excited to do that. And let's start with one of our first paintings for today, or our first pieces of art for today. So we're going to first talk about this piece that's called Toumone Giverny from Abdallah Benatour. So I'll have to just say off the bat, I am not an art critic. I'm one of those people who kind of knows what I like, and that's about all. I've never even, unfortunately, taken a class in art history, although I like art and I try to visit museums when I can. I will say that I'm really drawn to this piece right off the bat just because of how beautiful it is. I'm certainly a fan of color, and this color really pops. It's got this beautiful kind of Mediterranean blue in it. I don't know if that was part of Abdallah's inspiration, but it reminds me of the blue, you know, Mediterranean Sea, maybe off the Algerian coast. I was lucky enough to do field research in Algeria my second or third year when I was at BC. And, you know, being in Algiers or being in some other parts of the country, beautiful coastline, and also very interesting because obviously this reminds me a bit of kind of Impressionist art, which I believe, I don't know, but I mean, the title is Toumone, so I assume it's, you know, a piece maybe written either in, or excuse me, painted in his image or perhaps as a dedication to him. But those are some of my initial thoughts. I don't know, Ali, what you thought when you saw this piece.
Peter, I love the piece. It's beautiful. I congratulate you on your good taste. I chose a different piece, if I may talk about it for a moment, and that is a piece by Kamal Bulata, a Palestinian artist, and the title of the piece is In the Beginning Was the Word. This is an exhibit of works by contemporary Arab artists, basically from the 1950s to the 1980s. So the operative word is Arab, and that, of course, refers to a language. So what ties together the various artists in this exhibit is, in fact, they're all speakers of the Arabic language. And that made me think more about the role of language, if you will, in the cultural identity of a group or a region. When you think about the region that is covered by these paintings and drawings, it's a very vast area, very different set of cultures, histories, nationalities, if you will. But one thing that they have in common is the Arabic language. So going back now to the piece by Kamal Bulata, it is the use of Arab calligraphy, if you will, Arab letters in the course of turning them into abstract art. That's what the artists, in fact, a number of the artists in this exhibition have tried to do, to try to make Arabic letters into different elements in their artistic production, obviously abstracting them, rendering them in a highly creative and artistic fashion. And this actually became a movement in the second part of the 20th century, in the last few decades of the 20th century, called the Hurufiya movement. Hurufiya in Arabic simply means letters, or in this case, a movement that tried to use Arabic calligraphy and Arabic letters, making them into abstract shapes. And by doing so, in a sense, connecting to the cultural tradition of the world in the beginning and to the present, and also relating to the people who could very easily recognize these Arabic forms and yet connect them also to their religious traditions, to the Quranic traditions, and so on. So I see this particular, actually it's a silk screen, this particular work as an example of how modernist artist tries to use traditional elements from his or her own culture and build on them, make them into abstract forms, and by doing so, become a modernist artist in his or her own cultural milieu.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'd say a few things. One is, I love this piece. I think it's beautiful. I also say I really love, you know, Islamic and Arabic calligraphy. And as they go, I always try to find, you know, can I read all of the words inside of it? You know, so you're looking for fil bild kana kalima. And I think I can make it out there. But I'll also say, you know, I'm interested by the origin of the phrase, because it's one that, you know, I recognize from the gospel. You know, I believe it's from one of the four gospels, maybe John at the outset. But I also wonder to what extent this is an allusion to, you know, religious words, or is it, as you say, also kind of about linguistic stuff? But, you know, I think your points about the importance of language bonding together, you know, the Arab world and much of the Middle East. I thought about that right off the bat when I saw that this art collection was going to be focused on the Arab community from the 1950s to the 1980s. Because obviously, as we know well, if we're thinking about that time period, particularly the first half of it, you know, the dominant kind of transnational identity in the region was Arab nationalism. And so I think about the importance of the Arabic language, particularly perhaps Fusha, or in this case, maybe even potentially classical Arabic, at binding people together together across national borders, and of course the broader push for, if not a pan-Arab state, then maybe a broader pan-Arab identity. So I have no idea in the case of Bulata, because again, this is 83, to what extent that plays a role. I would guess probably not, but in some of the others, I wonder to what extent, you know, there's this common sense of Arab identity across the various artists that's also linking into some of the political movements of the time.
The point also that I would like to make. First of all, in response to your question about the role of the word, if you will, in the Islamic tradition, it is every bit as central and as important as the passage by John in the Christian scriptures would be. As I think you and everyone knows very well, in the Islamic tradition, the word and the Quran is taken to be literary God's words. So any kind of recourse, any kind of, you know, use of calligraphy and the word immediately evokes religious sentiments, but now closer to your point, also a basis for cultural or common cultural identity. And this indeed began, you know, quite early in the course of the 20th century, when the Arab nations, the Arab intellectuals, Arab writers wanted to claim a national identity separate from either the Ottoman rule under which they had lived for centuries, or the emerging European domination in their land. So what would be the basis for that identity? Well, clearly, Arabic language and Arabic words and Arabic letters would lend itself to that kind of usage and identity formation. So the Hurufiya movement began in that period and with that spirit.
I think that's well said. And I would add to that in terms of, for our listeners, you know, thinking about the Palestinian national movement, you know, you can read, you know, Rashid Khalidi or other, you know, famous Palestinian historians and political scientists about, you know, kind of the formation of Palestinian identity. And a lot of them will mark it to kind of the end of the 19th century, early 20th century. But there also is this kind of time period in the mid 20th century where Palestinian national identity is, if not enveloped, it's certainly part of this broader Arab national identity. But this time period in the 60s and the 70s is where it really starts to strongly split and say, look, there's still strong Arab solidarity, but there's this unique Palestinian identity. Although, of course, there are nonetheless still connections to the broader Arab community as well as the broader Islamic community that, again, not all Palestinians are Muslim, but a majority are. And so, again, I have no concept of Kemal Bulata's, you know, politics, but interesting to think about some of those broader transnational connections during this time period in the 80s. So 83, you know, this is an interesting time period for the Palestinians. It's basically when, unfortunately, they've not only been dispossessed and lost a lot of territorial control, not just in, you know, what they consider to be Palestine, but also in, you know, in the aftermath of Lebanon and the civil war there, before we have the Intifadas at basically the end, near the end of the decade. So interesting to think about that context. Ali, if I could bring it back a little to this other piece as well. One of the things I found really interesting when I did a little research and reading on Abdallah Ben Atur was, you know, his politics. And again, I didn't dig incredibly deeply, but it's fascinating because, you know, when I went and did field research in Algeria, one of the things I found, and I knew this first part a little bit, but it still was stronger than I thought it would be, you know, the Arabic that I've studied for a long time and can speak when I talk to people was basically useless in Algeria because, again, there's different Amias, there's different colloquial dialects that are spoken. And so I actually found in Algeria, I spoke my, you know, high school level French more than my Arabic, in part because the people I was interviewing and talking to had been educated, you know, pre-62 under French rule. And so most of the schools and universities were teaching in French and people were reading and learning in French. So I was talking to these, you know, revolutionary leaders of the Algerian Revolution, but they wanted to do interviews often in French. And so I thought about this painting from Ben Atur in that context because I read a little bit about him and you know, I don't know whether he was supportive of the Algerian Revolution. I presume that he was, but he also was someone who was not necessarily saying, you know, my art is for revolution, that's what it's for. He kind of had this vision, it seems, of kind of art as being somewhat separate from politics, but that also was somewhat a political statement. And I found that very interesting because obviously we both know well about how art is often a key part of revolution and political movement, where you have certain colors or certain images that kind of become symbols of it. But in this case, you know, Benatour, I don't know if he was thinking of himself as kind of separate from these kind of political streams, but I thought that was very interesting. And I also, again, see this painting as connecting to some sense French culture. Again, one of the challenges in Algeria today is that, you know, obviously they're focused a lot on internal politics and the fact that countries had a lot of economic stagnation. But like many former colonies, there is this struggle at various times about, you know, maybe there are people in the country who are kind of Francophone or like aspects of French culture, but then obviously did not like, you know, French colonialism and what it did in terms of inequality and you know, external domination of the country. So I also found some interesting, you know, themes thinking there as I saw this Algerian, you know, painter having this painting as, you know, again, maybe a tribute to Monet.
That's fascinating. And it's interesting that, you know, today when we think about our region, if you will, we think primarily or mostly of Islam as the defining, unifying feature of the Middle East and North Africa, with all the conflicts within Islam for the moment notwithstanding. But the use of language and the movement that I refer to, the Hurufiya, in a sense was a secular movement. It was claiming language rather than religion as the pillar, if you will, of Arab identity. And I think that's you know, quite a contrast to the present. And of course, as you well know and have studied in great detail, it is this same movement that leads to pan-Arabism of Gamal Abdel Nasser, you know, which is not, again, a religious movement, but a movement that emphasizes Arabism. And what is Arabism if not a language-based movement? So again, the point I'm trying to emphasize is the centrality, the importance of language as a foundation, as a basis for identity. And of course, by the use of calligraphy, in a sense, one is also building a link to religion and to the Holy Scripture, which has its own long-standing calligraphic tradition.
I think you know, those are great points. And just to build on two of them, so one is, you know, you brought up Nasser. You know, one of the things I find fascinating about Nasser, and I teach my students about in class, is, you know, we talk a lot today, you know, people come to classes on the Middle East and they want to know about the Arab Spring, or they see, you know, these various protest movements in the news. And, you know, we go back in my courses and we talk about Nasser and the rise of Arab nationalism, the various Nasserite revolutions in the 60s around the region. And one of the most fascinating things, because again, we see pictures today of maybe split screens from Al Jazeera of, you know, different squares where there are protests. But, you know, back in that time period, it was the voice of the Arabs. It was, you know, shortwave radio. And what was fascinating is to have people like Nasser who are speaking in the radio in Fusha, in modern standard Arabic. And part of the reason for that was because, going back to my point from before about Algeria, you know, all, presumably at least, many you know, Arabs could speak and understand Fusha. Now, again, it's something that historically, you know, maybe the more educated, you know, classes would know how to write and read better. But in terms of Fusha, that's the foundation for all of these local colloquial dialects. And so Nasser would use that language as a way of trying to unify the broader people in the broader region. So you're right, language was something that was supposed to transcend those national boundaries. And then the other thing I'll say is, in terms of the kind of the, some of the original founders of Arab nationalism, a lot of them were, you know, present day Lebanese or Syrian. And I think some of that is because, again, as maybe listeners know, Lebanon is also a country that's somewhat racked by ethnic and religious differences. But one thing that pretty much everyone has in common, or at least a majority of the country has in common, is that they're all Arab in that sense. And so even if you're Christian or you're Sunni or you're Shia, having an Arab identity was kind of in some ways the Lebanese pact or agreement that was going to be a key part of kind of what their country was all about. So I think you're right that language can bridge those differences. And I would also say, again, I'm not an expert on this stuff like the people who run McMullen are, but I think art can do that, right? Which is, again, why I think a lot of the time art is either tries to be used by politicians or sometimes, again, forget about the political aspect of it. It's something that can connect people and can connect people across, you know, various types of human boundaries, because we can all see this stuff and appreciate it and inspires various emotions in us. So I think your points are very well taken in that regard.
Peter, I would add one other qualification here, and that is that perhaps we should separate cultural identity from national or nationalistic identity. Nationalism is an ideology to mobilize people to, you know, define the other, if you will, and to try to create, if you will, political ambitions, feed a movement, and so on. Cultural identity, and in this case, the use of Arabic language and arts, need not necessarily lead to nationalism, and it needs to be recognized as such, rather than necessarily tied to nationalistic feelings and, the ideologization, if you will, of that identity, which is something that began, admittedly, with Nasser in the Arab world. But my point is that I think we would be better off if we could define cultural identity of a region, of a group, of a nation, separately from the ideologically tinged notion of national or nationalistic identity. And I believe this is what the exhibit here does. It doesn't really present a political point of view, but demonstrates the remarkable creativity of these artists as people who are promoting a sense of, modern Arab identity, if you will, in their work, in their arts.
Mm-hmm. For my, again, admittedly brief research into Abdallah Benatour, I think you would agree with everything that you said. And I think that you're right. When we think about nationalism or politics, which is, again, in some ways our field of study, at least in a broad sense, culture, I think, does predate it, and culture exists without it. And you're right that when nationalism or various political ideologies emerge, they often use culture, they use a common language or common history as a baseline to say, well, we have now this common political identity that now we want independence or we want to advocate for certain policies. But you're right, it's separate from and predates it, even though, as you say correctly, it's used sometimes as a tool or as a way of creating solidarity among people, but also as a way of dividing people. And I think you're right, it's important to keep that in mind. All right. So with that, thank you so much, the McMullen Museum, for having Professor Bano Azizi and I. It was a pleasure to look over the virtual the art. I hope to visit in person before the end of the semester once I'm well vaccinated, which I hope to be soon. And we encourage all of our students to check this out. I will definitely be mentioning it in my class. I'm teaching International Relations of the Middle East right now. So hope to encourage the students to check this stuff out.
I also want to thank you and to really express my sense of great pride in having this exhibit at our institution and being part of this conversation. Thank you.
That concludes this episode of Art in Focus. Thank you for listening, and be sure to visit The Terrace, the McMullen Student Publications page, to find more episodes in the series. This episode was produced by Rachel Brody, the McMullen Graduate Assistant, and a doctoral candidate in the History Department. It was mixed and edited by Nisha Momin and Megan Minahan. Thanks to Rachel Chamberlain, the McMullen Manager of Education, for her guidance and support. Finally, thank you to our digital team, Arvind Mohapatra and Alex Hull, who uploaded these episodes onto The Terrace.